Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Today you will hear my conversation with Nashville-based folk rock songwriter Kristen Ford. We talk all about being surrounded by queer role models in her hometown of Northampton, Massachusetts, signing to Ani DeFranco's label, Righteous Babe Records, her latest tour supporting Ani, and the number one piece of advice she would offer younger people seeking out community. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. So if you want to begin by introducing yourself and where are you, by the way? Where are you based? We can start with that, your name and where you are.
Sure. My name is Kristen Ford and I am in Nashville, Tennessee right now. And that's also where I live. There's room between all the bachelorette parties. You can come down and have a good time here. There's so much music, country and Western.
Yeah, for sure. So I want to begin with some background with you. Like, where did you grow up? I read that you're from Northampton, and are we talking Pennsylvania Northampton or Massachusetts Northampton?
Oh, I didn't know there was a Northampton, PA. But yeah, I lived in six states by the time I was 18, so I moved around a lot, but I spent most of my upbringing in Western Mass. So yeah, that includes like Northampton and Greenfield.
Yeah, I'm also from Mass, so that was the answer I was hoping to hear, selfishly.
Oh, okay. What part of Mass?
Acton.
Acton, kid.
Yes.
That's like Northeastern. Or no, it's like Central. Is there a prison in Acton? Is it on Route 2?
There's a prison like where the Rotary is.
Yeah! Like, yo, you are from Mass, because you know I'm like, that's what I know about Acton.
Yes. And I say the word rotary and not roundabout.
Yeah, it's a rotary. Well, that must have been a nice place to grow up, though. You were so close to the beach and to the city, and it's pretty out there.
Yeah, it is a very pretty, very lush town. It's very, very quiet, too. And I feel like, you know, as a kid, you're restless and you kind of think like, oh, well, there's nothing out here. What do I do? Like, and then you grow up, and I spent a majority of 2020 quarantined there. And it was honestly really nice. Like, I probably would have lost my mind if I had stayed in the city. I live in New York now, and I went to school here. So I was honestly like really grateful for like, I don't know, the sort of like peace that being there sort of offered me during that time. Yeah, what was it like growing up in Northampton? Because like, I know like Western Mass, like the only things I know about it pretty much are the fact that UMass is in Amherst. And yeah.
I think it was a great place to grow up, and it was really lucky to, I was just surrounded by music and chances to, I went to a rock and roll camp out there led by June Millington, who founded the first all-female rock band to be signed to a major label, like in the 1970s. She and her sister like toured all over the world and just like kicked ass before it was even a thing. So getting to go to that rock camp was absolutely major. And it's also like super liberal and gay there. So I came out when I was 18, but I think for me, I think that took a while considering how liberal it was there and how like accepting my family is. But I don't know, I really wanted to be like a popular kid. So I just feel like in 2003, 2004, the world's just not like as queer as it is now, I think.
Yeah, that's
insane? Like, did you have like IRL like experiences like with June Millington and her sister?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about those.
Well, so many. They're like my aunties. Yeah, I just started going to this rock camp when I was 15. And then later that same year, I went to an Ani Franco show and had this like crazy just moment of clarity that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to control an audience like that and make my guitar sound like that and write songs. And, you know, I think getting to work with June, who is, she is so fierce. She is so badass. Like, she's like, you got to learn how every part of the live show works, from how do you play drums to how do you play bass to, if you're playing lead guitar, what does that mean? That's different than playing rhythm guitar on acoustic. And if you're going to be a singer, then you have to know how the microphone works. And so then that means you can run sound. Like, it's just insane that to this day, this camp is just making all of these little girls just musical beasts who are fearless and can just do everything.
Yes. What's the name of the camp?
It's called the Institute for the Musical Arts, or the IMA. And that's out in Goshen, Mass, which is just next to Northampton. But yeah, you know, I liked growing up in Western Mass, but I'm also a city girl and I love just having lots of adventures. And I always felt like it just took forever to get everywhere. You have to drive, and I just found it boring. And, you know, I've been kind of living in cities ever since I turned 18. I was like, I gotta go, bye.
Yeah. And speaking of driving, you pretty much hit the road full time in 2014 without a backward glance. So like, what were you doing like right before that? And sort of what pushed you to make the jump and be like, I'm going to throw myself into touring all day, every day?
Wow, that's such a great question and fantastic segue. Very smooth. I was pretty tired of living in Boston at the time. I'd been in Boston for like 6 years, working in like three jobs and finishing up this album called Dinosaur that I came out with in that time. And I think, I don't know if it was one specific thing that caused me to say, okay, I'm going to go tour now. But I did try to have a backup plan. Like, I had scheduled a month of working out at a dude ranch in Wyoming, like while traveling, living in this van. And then I played like two shows in the town of Buffalo, Wyoming. And I made more in those two gigs than I did in an entire month of working in the kitchen, like chopping onions. And that really was a pretty strong sign from the universe that it's okay to not have a safety net, just jump and see what's going to happen. And yeah, stayed on the road full time for 2 years and then landed here in Nashville, where I was honestly pretty ready to take up more than a suitcase and have a shower. Or like, I became obsessed with wanting to make spaghetti, because it's really hard to make spaghetti or like boil a lot of water when you're like camping and living in a van. And I also really wanted a fluffy mat for the shower. You know, you step out of the shower and it's like the really soft fluffy ones. You don't get to have that when you're just in and out of gym showers and hotels. And so it is funny, after 2 years, there's certain things that you just want to do normal stuff.
Right. And I think you might have mentioned at some point that you wished that someone had written a book about how to survive as a DIY musician who's like pretty much self-managing, and where advice is doled out that isn't advice like, oh, just go get a manager or hire a lawyer or whatever. So like, what is something that you wish you had known that you would always like tell up and coming musicians?
Yeah, I think I would tell myself, if I could go back in time, that it's okay to take a day off it's okay to take several days off. Because I think I spent a lot of time traveling, and when you're like playing super small clubs and just trying to make sure you have enough gas to get to the next place, every single day that you could be playing, you want to be. And then that might be free meal from the venue, or, you know, every day that you're out there earning money is in theory better. But I think it actually is, that line of thought makes it a lot more difficult than it should be, because maybe you just take that Tuesday night off and save your energy and go like, go explore a museum, or go to someone else's show and get inspired, or like go to a play, like do something that brings you joy and like take some rest, and then play on like a Thursday or a Friday night where it's actually going to pay you better, or the venue, you know, just saying no is actually quite powerful.
Yeah. And I think that it's really important not just to give yourself that space, but to also realize that giving yourself time to decompress is like, even, I would argue, even more vital, like when like being like go, go, go all the time is your normal, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And I wanted to talk about Ani DiFranco too, obviously, because like you're now signed to her label and touring with her. And I think like
I love hearing you say that out loud.
Oh my God. It's real. It's happening, guys. And so like I think like a lot of people have like a vision or an idea of like what it might be like hypothetically to get to work with their idols. So what's it like actually living it?
It's been such a complete joy. And I feel like, yeah, the tour just wrapped up. So we switched into October, and I was as excited as I was that it's now spooky season. I was like a little bit sad that September tour was over, but we got to have an adventure, 12 dates and my first ever tour bus, which has been something I've like always dreamed about. I've made wishes on tour buses for like 15 years, you know? And so to actually get on one was like, what? And yeah, I just learned so much from Ani and from the whole crew about just how to kind of take things to another level. And her ability to like charm an audience and turn any kind of problem, like a tuning problem, or somebody breaks a string and she'll just like tell a poem, like, or someone shouts something bizarre and then turning that into this like heartfelt, cool conversation. I mean, and then just the energy, hearing songs live is so different from listening to the recording. And, you know, I think I'm also guilty of not necessarily following some of her later stuff as hard as like the stuff like Little Plastic Castle or like Dilate, you know, from when I first was discovering her. But especially getting to hear some of the new songs, like she has a song Crocus that's like fire. That song is so dope. And just getting to observe soundcheck and see how it all comes together, how it gets made. And I think at a certain point, the whole like, what's it like to work with your idol, or what's it like to, you know, meet your hero, like, it's amazing, but you can't really like go around treating somebody like they're on a pedestal, or they don't put their pants on one leg at a time, just like we all do, you know? So like, it's just people. And I feel like I had such a great time, and I have a bunch of close friends, everybody that was on the journey together. So I just feel so grateful. And another thing that I really enjoyed was getting to see musician friends of mine in every city. Some of them came to the show or helped me at my merch booth. And I just feel like there's so many incredible artists that I've collaborated with or met or am a fan of over the years. And I'm not really sure why it's me that's signed to the label and touring with her, but I'm so fucking stoked. So, you know, but also humble, because I feel like it's just the luck of the draw.
Yeah. And I thought it was really awesome what you said about, like, sort of navigating through how she navigates through technical difficulties in a live setting, because I feel like those are just as special a part of a live experience as, like, the show going on as it should, because, like, it's interactive. And it's really fun to see, like, the creative ways that people will navigate it. Like, maybe, like, a string will break, so the rest of the band will jam out and just go crazy for 10 minutes. But, yeah. I also wanted to ask about the song, too, White Man's Dream, which is a call to action for women, femmes, and queers to demand their freedom and personal individual joy. And would you tell me a little bit about how the song came to be? Like, what did the process look like of putting it together?
Sure. I think that's a great intro for White Man's Dream. And it's a call for everybody, because even if you are a white man, it doesn't mean that you think that women's ideas should be excluded from government or from control of our bodies or of controlling all of the money and all of the companies. And anyway, if you start to peel back the layers of the onion, it just gets, it gets pretty dire. But also, I was in a songwriting class in Nashville at the time, and we were hearing from different mentors who had written hit songs, and some of the industry in Nashville around songwriting is a little, I don't know, it's just a very different trait than, I think, growing up in Massachusetts, writing a song in your bedroom on acoustic guitar because you feel something, versus you're in Nashville and you've never met this co-writer or co-writers, and a couple of you get together in a room and you decide you're going to write a song in 3 hours. And I think I came into looking at that kind of method of writing as being, like, lesser, like, not as pure art or as inspired. And I think also I've now had many, many co-writes, and I find, you know, White Man's Dream was also a co-write with Ani, where it's like, okay, let's look at the structure of this song, let's figure it, let's look at the lyrics, see what we can, what we can whittle down, or how we can best put this form. And I think, you know, getting to work your song craft, and I just put everything that I was feeling in terms of frustration or just the path that I've walked and things that I wanted to say, and seeing Roe v. Wade go down, and, like, all of this things just kind of building, Black Lives Matter. And then here I am in Nashville, where there's, like, people just waving Confederate flags around and don't tread on me rattlesnakes everywhere. And our congressmen are, like, suggesting lynching come back. And it's just unbelievable that I'm just like, what is going on? And I think, you know, I needed to turn in a song for the next week. And so kind of that inspiration meets Massachusetts inspiration meets Nashville discipline. And then you get a song like White Man's Dream, which also was like my ticket to getting to work with Ani and getting on Righteous Babe. So I just, so much love for that song. I think that it's got some kind of magic.
Yeah. And it sounds great too. It's got a great groove to it.
Thank you. I played everything on that song. Ani did the bass, but it's pretty fun to get to flex my multi-instrumentalism.
Yeah, definitely, I bet. And I also wanted to ask you about presentation, because something that I think is so awesome about presentation with performers, especially, like, as a queer person, is the way that fashion can be used as a signifier to other people, or a shared language to communicate with people to be like, aha, I'm one of your kind, you know? So how does fashion and presentation affect how you present yourself on stage?
Oh, I love that question too. I think, you know, that's something else that's been an evolution. Like, I'm right now, I'm just wearing like some ratty like shoes and jeans and a t-shirt. Like, I guess I got a belt on, but you know, I'm not really well put together, whereas I used to just drive all day and then hit the stage like that. But now I find it helps to almost put on your like superhero outfit, whatever that's going to be for your stage look. And my personal fashion is just like very loud and bright colors, and sometimes wearing like super oversized like men's basketball jersey with like rainbow leggings that are like so loose on the top and tight on the bottom, or it's just like relaxed fit all around. But I actually have a stylist here in town. Her name's Barrow, and she works at this place called the Bowery Vault, where they have original music and cool vintage clothes, and she helped me put together some looks for the tour. And I think it's just fun, whether it's a photo shoot or a video shoot or a tour or a stage look, to just play around with different identities and play around with different presentations and results and see how it goes. And sometimes I think just every day it's nice to make a little bit of a statement with your clothes, which, living in a white man's dream, we got a really slick shirts and hoodies just to kind of start the conversation where you go. I have another shirt that says "Say Gay" every day, which, you know, you got to wear that around Florida these days. So I don't know, it's just crazy times we live in, and it is nice to find a friend out there.
Yeah, for sure. And when you're touring, how do you feel like when you're after the show, for instance? I assume that people will likely come up to you and want to like talk about your set and such and stuff like that. What are some of the most memorable interactions that you've had with the audience on this past tour specifically?
Yeah, I mean, Ani fans are absolutely amazing people. I feel so lucky to have gotten to open the shows for her, and then have people who maybe weren't even expecting to hear me to be like, oh yeah, that was amazing. There were a lot of young people, like, gotta love the underage fans. Also, I was young the first time I heard Ani, and it's fun. Like, I met a few people where it was even their first concert, where it's like, oh, well, now it's like just passing the baton on, you know? And it was nice to hear from a lot of like other biracial people, or like biracial queer people, or I've met a lot of they/thems, and, you know, otherly, maybe like other than cis pronouns going on, where people are really like, thank you for singing about pronouns, or like, thank you for like trying to just spread some awareness. And it's interesting, where I don't really think of, you know, like myself as being any kind of, I don't know the word, like, I don't like gay brush my teeth in the morning. I don't like gay drive. I just drive, you know? and yet it is important that we are able to like see each other and hear each other. And I don't know, I'm still amazed at the outpouring of love at the merch booth. It was crazy. We were selling out of stuff and signing autographs and taking selfies, and, you know, just again, that feeling of, wow, is this actually like all happening right now?
Yeah. And I think that's also a good segue into something I planned on asking as well, about identity. So how, as like, has your personal identity as a biracial queer femme person informed the creative direction of your art?
Yeah, I think it's, at first, when I was very first writing songs, I wouldn't put any pronoun into the song, partially because I just wanted them to be universal, that anyone could hear them, but you can have a pronoun she and be a woman and it could still be universal. So I think that's something that I sort of bloomed in over time, but I think it's just such a great time to be out and about these days. I just feel like, similar as there's Black Girl Magic, like there's some kind of like rainbow magical unicorn shit happening right now, and I love it, especially the more that certain hateful groups will try to shut us down, the more important it is that we just say, look, I'm not even trying to be political, I'm just existing, shopping at the boys section if I want to, you know. And I have the right to use the bathroom wherever I want without getting in a fight over it. And, you know, I think that art can move mountains, whereas sometimes, you know, like the Vietnam War may not have ended if people weren't out in the street protesting and folks weren't like making art about it and taking amazing photographs and writing songs and, you know, just like creating a movement. I think the revolution's already underway. I just want to be on the right side of it.
Yeah. And I think it's telling that every like congressperson or like anyone in the state legislature is just like trying so hard to double down on eradicating queer rights because the cultural tide is turning against them. They're just grasping at straws now, I feel like.
It's like when they were trying to censor hip hop and put explicit warnings on it and say, you can't say this, you can't put this on the radio, you can't put this on TV, we won't sell your records. And look at hip hop now.
Yeah.
You can't push against like the truth and the love, because it's bigger than anything.
And I also wanted to ask you as well, do you tour by yourself or do you tour with a band?
This last tour, I was solo, and I have done a lot of solo touring as like a one-woman band. So I do live looping of like beatboxing and harmonies and turn the guitar into a bass and all kinds of magic. It's a lot of fun. It's even more fun when I get to play with a band, just because it frees me up a little bit. And also on the recordings, you'll hear pretty much the full band representation of the tune. So it just depends on the show. Like I just did Kerrville Folk Festival with an amazing like 4-piece all female band, which was really fun. And you know, this tour was solo, so everything in between.
That's really awesome. I think it's really cool to see like how much one person can be capable of, like especially like when it comes to looping. Because I recently saw Sydney Gish open for Jeff Rosenstock at a show, and she played it was just her and a pedal. And it was really cool to just hear her like improvise on the spot. And like, you could tell that she had spent hours upon hours in her room, just like noodling around on her guitar and just like, and it's really awesome. Like, how does it compare to playing like with other people?
I think I just approach music as it's like running downhill, where you're maybe in charge of moving your legs, but it's also instinctual, and then gravity's helping you and momentum's helping you. And I want to have that feeling every time I play, so that I don't want to be thinking about, I don't want to be bored. I don't want to be doing something that I'm not sure how to do it, so I'm concentrating too hard. And I think some of the feedback that was cool to hear on this last tour of people who came to like multiple shows is they were like, every single time I heard you, it was different. And sometimes I think loopers have the reputation for, okay, it's going to be this, and then we'll hear that for a bunch, and then it'll be something else, and then we'll hear that for a bunch. And then you hear one song and they're all going to be exactly the same. And you know, I just kind of look at it as a tool to help me express the song, but the song itself still needs to have a cool arc and highs and lows and dynamics. And I want there to be a good mix of the songs throughout the set. And just being able to use effects or take a solo or try something new with my voice or whatever till I get that feeling that I'm running real fast downhill. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I live to be on the edge of that. So I think you can get there either way, solo or with a band. It is fun though when there's like, it's not just your energy, it's also, oh, the drummer did this thing and I heard it and it got me inspired to do this thing. And then, oh, the bass player is doing this. What? And then you just create this thing that's very vibey. It's exciting having the energy of a band.
Yeah. I also am curious about what you listened to the most in the van.
You know, there wasn't like too much music on the tour. I have been listening to a lot of like the Pretenders, and this is kind of a guilty pleasure, but Post Malone's new record, I just find it very comforting. Every song is super chill. And I've been reading Bob Marley's biography, so I've been listening to a lot of like older reggae, like Jimmy Cliff and Peter Tosh and the original Marley and the Wailers stuff. Reggae is just perfect if you need to just chill out. And then also Ani's bass player, Todd Sickafoose, is a really cool composer and multi-instrumentalist, and he's done scoring for films and podcasts, and it's like instrumental music, but that was amazing. Just wind down time, or when you're trying to focus, you just want something instrumental. Yeah, so that was kind of the bus listens.
That's nice. Do you ever feel like, since like you're mostly working when you hear music, that maybe like that listening can be like more limited in that way?
I think, you know, there could be like such a thing as like ear fatigue if you've been in the studio all day. And I always feel like I've been recording a lot recently, and I always feel like it's like going into like a time machine or a spaceship where you don't really know what time it is, and you don't know, there's hardly any windows to the outside world. So like, you have no idea. You're just in the spaceship, like making music. And a lot of times you leave a recording session and you do not want to listen to music. You just turn the radio off in the car and just have chill. And, you know, but I think just the opposite of it being work, it's like the more I learn as a musician and the deeper the rabbit hole goes, the more interest I have in taking it all in. And I had recently had a little bit of like a heavy chip on my shoulder where I think I had been grinding so long and wasn't sure if it was ever going to like, if air quote, like it was ever going to happen, that I was starting to not enjoy bigger shows or like bigger festivals. Because it was like, well, why not me? Those jokers up there, you know, I know that's very like small minded, but it is true that jealousy can happen when you feel like you're having trouble getting your comeuppance, you know? I was in town one day and I went to the Chris Parrica show here in town. So like, I'm constantly going out to hear live music, and I love sort of active listening to music and trying to pursue different genres, so it's not all like the same thing. But I do have my go-tos that I return to often. I think hobbies are a good thing, and so are like pets or gardening or things that just get you out in nature and unplug a little bit from the matrix. You know, we're creating like two realities all the time, the one that is actually out here and then the one that's like, anytime you're uncomfortable, you know, like pick up your phone, look at your phone. Anytime you need that, I don't know if you've ever done this. You like doom scrolling on Instagram and you're like, I'm just going to close Instagram. And then you're like looking at your phone and you're not sure what you're supposed to do. So you like open Instagram again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even like as hooked on it as some of these younger kids who, well, back in my day, I didn't get a cell phone until I was almost done with high school, you know, but like times have changed. And I think it's interesting that we kind of live in two realities, the virtual one, like where you and I get to have a conversation right now, miles apart from each other, you know, different time zone even. And yet there's also like this other reality where like my dog is like really interested in this smell that's outside and what the weather's doing right now. And how does your body feel? And like, what kind of thoughts are you thinking? Like, are they kind? Are they fast? Are they slow? Like, I don't know. There's so much worth unplugging for. And yet here we are making, as artists, we're like making content where it's like, please listen to my song. Please watch my video. Like, subscribe. That stuff's interesting. Like the ego and the numbers and the streaming and the, of course we want success as artists or as anything, as makers, as doers. We want to be quantifiably good at it. And yet the love, the authenticity, the why you get up in the morning is nothing to do with that.
No, that's a good point. And because there's so much access to data now on the back end, all we think about is data and numbers and like the whole rat race to outdo yourself and to get your engagement rate higher. Like even like lawyers who are making six figures are starting YouTube channels, you know? Yeah,
and it's also like super amazing. Like if you have a question, you can find out the answer to it. It's such a beautiful time to live. Like the phones, the cameras are so good. Anyone can make a movie. You know, I don't want anyone can make an album and just distribute it worldwide. Like it's such an exciting, amazing time to be here. I wouldn't change it. But I also think that like, I don't know what would happen if everybody kind of just like chilled for a minute. Looked around. Do you know your neighbors? Are you making a nice community? How are you doing? You know what I mean? Like we have depression and anxiety and like certain things that society says is fine. Like to go and you can go and drink alcohol anywhere you want, you know, but then some places like weed's going to be illegal. And I don't know, the gun thing coming from Massachusetts and being here in Tennessee, it's just like so insane. Like I'm not that tough. I've never had like a real fight. But I've traveled 48 states and 10 countries and played shows like with an expensive guitar and just hanging out and making new friends. And if I don't need a gun, you don't need a gun, dude. I don't know who I think is listening to this podcast that I'm just convinced, but it's just absurd, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure the chief funding organizers of the NRA are long-time listeners of this podcast.
The best is the sticker on the back of the car where it says, you know, it's supposed to be like the family stick figures. And then it's like my family and it's like all different guns or machine guns and pistols. And all right, that's your family. I get it. You're real tough.
But yeah, to close, if you could say anything to a young person who's out there and maybe is feeling isolated and hoping to connect with other people, what would you say to that person?
Well, I think you got to start looking after number one, which is yourself. I have a song called That Girl in the Mirror that should be coming out on the new album. And it's just about, you can date different people, but if you don't love yourself, if you don't start with who you are and where you are, then you're not going to find that out in the world. You know, you do have to start with just caring for yourself. And also I would say just like, it could be a small step in the right direction. Like I'm gonna rather than consume news that makes me feel bad, I'm gonna find a gay rom-com to watch that's gonna make me feel good. Or go to a show at like go hear a band that you have never heard of that doesn't, you know, like Taylor Swift sold out, like her show is sold out. So just go to your little local shitty club and like go hear some new music and perhaps have something to offer too, where you could be like, I took some photos of you. Can I send them to you? Or I love playing guitar growing up. It was such a great vehicle to be that asshole at the camp out or the cookout with the guitar around the bonfire, or to have songwriter friends and you're trading songs and oh, how do you play it like that? Oh yeah, show me how that works. And you know, just being that person who went to the show and said hi. Like, there's not that many of you out there, especially at the DIY level. You get bigger and bigger, and you know, I also think we underestimate like how much we can offer when you start to turn and try to help somebody else. Then all of a sudden any kind of like pity party you're having for yourself is not as important, because now you have a purpose and you have somewhere to go. And I would also say just like trust the universe and just relax a little bit, because I mean, I tried every which way to figure out how to crack the music business, and I never thought I should just focus on writing the right song and then that Ani DeFranco would come to my show and hear it, and then I would get signed to a label, and then I would be sitting here chatting with you on this podcast. So you gotta just go with it, one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, well, thank you, Kristen, so much for coming on and chatting. I thoroughly enjoyed your company, and I can't wait to see what else you got coming up.
Izzy, thank you so much for having me on, and thanks for checking out White Man's Dream. I sure do. That song's close to my heart, so I just appreciate getting to spread the gospel.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Kristen Ford for joining me today. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.